Hi, my name is Ephraim McIntyre, and this is my podcast about war games. I might end up talking about other stuff too, but predominantly this is focused around Foundation War Games terrain. So I hope you enjoy my first episode. Kind of just rambling. Take care. Okay, armed and ready. So I set out to record this a little bit earlier, but got caught up with this thing called work. So yeah, here we are. Today's topic. It's not really a topic, it's more just me rambling. So I went ahead and purchased a laser cutter over the weekend from Xtool. I got the new D1 Pro with the 20 watt diode laser that, if the YouTubers are to be believed, can cut through MDF and other pieces of wood at a relatively decent thickness, as well as acrylic. I have been waffling back and forth about what I wanted to buy. Last year I ended up buying a little CNC rotary tool machine, which I've never used, for about $300, thinking that, hey, I can do something similar to what a laser cutter can do, but for cheaper. And it turns out the whole kineticness of it and the spinning stuff, kineticness, not my game, don't want to deal with that. Never actually got it spinning or up and running. Just looking at the space that I had and what I wanted to do, it's like, this is not a good idea. So I went ahead and dropped $1,300 on this new laser. Probably it's going to be super cheap here in a couple of months and I'll be like, oh, well, shit. But it is kind of new technology-ish, the 20-watt diode. I think there's other companies that have that as well, but it's still kind of in the newness for lasers. And I want to make historical MDF terrain, counters, all that kind of stuff. A company called Litco on Amazon, stuff like that. Acrylic counters, wood counters, board box liners, just kind of anything related to gaming. I want to promote, facilitate material culture in wargaming in the United States. And big motivation from this is I love beautiful wargame tables. It's what brought me to wargaming when I was a kid. Not the lore, not the models, but being around this really beautiful, intricately detailed diorama that you could then play with. That's what I wanted to do. So I want to help out with creating that material culture. And all the MDF and a lot of the historical wargaming shops and stuff that pops up, especially for minis, it's all in England. Every time you go look for something up, it's like, oh, where's it going to be shipping from? Bristol, or maybe from the EU, like in Spain? Like, there's one that's from Madrid, and you're just like, well, okay, I mean, that's wonderful that these things exist, but, you know, and that we can ship overseas and have airplanes and all this craziness to get it around, but, it was kind of, you know, I was thinking, well, why would I do this? I mean, you can already get all this stuff online, but it's not local. It's not, there's not someone in the United States. There's other people that are doing it, but there's always room for more, I think. And especially with something in the art realm of business, as long as it's different a little bit, you'll get customers. You'll get people curious. You'll get someone who's like, oh, I'll just order once and see how it goes, and then, you know, decide if I order from them or continue to order from China or England or whatever. But I think especially in the historical wargame space and just the wargame space in general, it tends to be more conservative guys. You know, they want that made in the U.S. type thing. I want to get into manufacturing. So, I mean, it all kind of works. So we'll spend the money. We'll see what happens. Maybe 5 years from now, it's all a failure, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'll be exactly where I am now, which is where I would be if I didn't try. So, might as well try. And then, of course, with all of this comes a lot of other things, like this, starting the podcast, talking to you guys about what I'm thinking. Give myself a platform and a space on a regular basis to sit down and think about what direction I'm going, what do I want to do? What do I want to make this about? And thinking about that this morning, And it kind of relates back to this other hobby that I had called FPV, first person view. Basically, you get little remote control planes, or predominantly on quadcopters, little VR goggles, and go fly around and stuff. It hurts me to call them VR goggles, but anyway, I was pretty deep into that and forgot what my point was with this. But so there was very much a push within the FPV hobby to race. Like, let's do competition, let's make this F1, let's get on ESPN, let's, all this pressure. And at the start, I was like, well, hell yeah, let's do this. I was a little hustler. I was a photographer and making it happen, and in my 20s, and was like, yeah, let's do this. And then I ran into a group of guys that was like, fuck that. Oh, maybe I gotta bleep that out. But let's just crack a beer and get a lawn chair and put these little cameras on wings instead of quadcopters. That's a huge difference. Little quadcopters, you get this like 3-minute battery. It's putting out so much power and energy to get up in the air and stay that it has such a short flight time. But you can do incredible things with it in those 3 minutes. These guys, putting it on the wings, putting it on RC planes, you could get 15, 20, 45, hour and a half flights. And they weren't always just loitering up above us either. You can cover some considerable distance in those times. And with a efficient wing platform and strong radio signals, the right frequencies, you can have a lot of fun with it. And so I kind of see that in the hobby community as well. There's a big focus on the game part of what we do. You know, this is war gaming. And coming up with this right now, just off the top of my head, but maybe it's better to approach it as like war hobbying. Like the gaming side of it. I'm having a renaissance of gaming in my life, and that's where this is coming from. And one of the guys that I've been playing with recently, he hates painting, and he won't do any of the craft stuff. But he's just as dedicated as someone that would show up with a fully painted set of miniatures. He's putting on a demo at a con here in a few months, so you can't question that. But he hates the hobby side of it. He doesn't want to build a board. He doesn't want to mess with glue or build stuff or paint. He's just about the game. And that's made me think about what it means to me. And thinking back on what I did in gaming and the experiences that I had and the group that I had and the environment and how that shaped my experience. And I'm definitely on the side of let's chill. Like, I don't necessarily want to play 4 or 5 games over the course of a day. I would much rather play one game that has 5 to 8 people. We're all involved, and we have like the first 4 hours where things develop on the battlefield, and we get to push our pretty miniatures around and see this nicely painted table, and like that. The aesthetics for me is a huge part of it. That's what I want to help with in the hobby. On the gaming side of things, that doesn't matter so much. I want to keep the game as simple as possible. I want to move some models around. They're going to have a simulated fight, and then someone's going to win, and someone's going to flee, and they're going to follow up. And I mean, doesn't require lots of details. On the other hand, I guess that's a part I'm still struggling with, because I do really like Battletech, and I like the sit around and debate little nuances of the experience of what's happening. Basically taking a 5 minutes of time and, you know, bringing that out to 8 hours, essentially, is what we're doing with Battletech. And then I guess there's the other side of it, where you're taking weeks and weeks and weeks, and you're compressing it down into 8 hours. And that's, like, tactical. I'd never approached historical wargaming before. I was a 100% Warhammer in all its different flavors and varieties, War Machine, and Magic the Gathering. Like, that was what I did for years, 2 decades. And then I became an adult and went and tried to do stupid adulty things and failed at that. So I ended up being a photographer, and that brought me to drones. And now I'm doing serious adulty things because I happen to know a lot about the drone toys. And so serious adults are paying me serious money to talk to them about the drone toys. I'm very lucky. But I had a point with that. But I really like a couple different YouTube channels. 52 Miniatures, that style, that guy, I don't know his name, is one of them. Little Wars TV, the dude Greg over there is fantastic. There's Guerrilla Gaming, I think the guy's name is Greg as well, I'm not sure, but I watch a lot of his stuff. And it's just a good mix of the hobby and the gaming. It's the same kind of way that I think of as dinner parties. Like, you come together, you hang out, you're gonna chill in a room, and you're all gonna think about this one thing intensely together, and you're gonna talk about it. And I definitely don't like one-on-one wargaming. I don't want to be at a table with one other person. I want to be at a table with a bunch of other people, and we're all controlling, and we're all collectively making ideas. Maybe there's one bigger leader that's like, hey, you should do this or you should do that. But ultimately, I have my minis, and this is my force. It's part of a bigger force, and you know, it's very community oriented for me, like that. This wargaming, war hobbying, whatever we want to talk about it. Just looking at the stuff that I was writing earlier, beers and battles is what I want it to be. Even though I don't really drink, I don't know. We're human. Beer is such a thing. And to reference it, I think, works in this context, even though I don't particularly partake very often. Yeah, so anyway, I'm bought a laser engraver cutter, and I want to make MDF terrain. And I'm having a renaissance of wargaming in my life, and I want to bring what I'm learning and what I'm seeing to everyone else. And so part of this podcast is the start of creating additional media. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, to promote the company and to promote making stuff. But more than anything, I want to promote the hobby. And I want to promote what I gained from it and what it brought to my life and the positivity and the experiences, and tell people about that. And on a personal note, relive it myself. These are things I haven't thought about in a long time. I sort of killed off all these things when I became an adult. It was like, oh, you're going to play with little miniature painted toys when you're 25? And it's like, well, I should have been like, well, fuck yes, I will. But instead I was like, well, no, I'll go get a real job and try to make that work. And now after the pandemic and trying to make the real thing work and having some success at it, but not being really happy, I want to just move, pivot, friends, into gaming. What I grew up doing that brought me the most joy in my whole life. Friends and people, and I want to approach it in a very knowledgeable way this time, now that I understand people in groups. It's not just, oh, these are the people, and I just kind of got to learn how groups interact through this crowd. Now I can kind of understand, like, oh, okay, yeah, you don't like the hobby, but you like the gaming part. And like, oh, you like the hobby, and maybe you don't like the gaming part. Haven't met that person yet, although that is kind of me. I would much rather be the person, you know, put the whole table together and point up the armies and then be like, cool, you three get those troops, and you three get those troops, and I'll be the game master, and we'll just watch this kind of all come together. I would be very happy not having the responsibility of having to fight the battles or interact with people, but just observing the models moving across the table and getting removed or having victory. Yeah. So lots of thinking about this. It's kind of interesting what a $1,300 purchase when you're late at night and the clock is ticking down on their sale deal, which doesn't seem to have gone away, which is a little bit annoying, but it's kind of the push that I needed to get something that I wanted anyway. And it's not like it's a huge dent in my bank account. That's not a flex. That's just, I'm relatively responsible and smart and leveraged that. to start this up and see what kind of business I can make of it. And I'm not under any illusion that this is going to start creating a lot of money, you know, off. I'm not expecting to be, you know, buying a house in 6 months and, you know, having to work 24 hours a day and getting space so that I can buy more machines and hiring people to crank out designs. And, you know, obviously I've thought about what it could be in 6 months, but, yeah. And part of this confidence is spurred by leading projects at work now. Now that they're trusting me with that, it's like, oh, okay, maybe I can lead people. Maybe I do understand about setting these expectations and, like, asking people to do things and following up and having them go, yeah, sure, I'll do that. That sounds great. People want to do it. That's weird. That's so weird to me. But I'll just have to go with it and create this thing and create content and videos, because I was also going through and looking at, you know, if I want to create a successful business, it's going to be on the product and it's going to be on the names and all of that. But at the end of the day, it'll be about me and the face in the background and the kind of content and ideas I want to put out there. So I need to get on the ball of thinking about gaming, which is what I think about all the time anyway, and what my ideas are, where I think we should go, what I think we should do, understanding what it is to be a game master, actually put on an RPG game, actually be a game master, not just say that. Speaking of which, if you're interested in a Traveler game, I'm trying to put that together. But doing things for the first time is not something I'm very specialized in, so it's really hard. Let's make sure this is still recording. Ah, it is. Great. Well, cool. We're about 16 and a half minutes in of me just rambling about game stuff. I want to close out on one particular game here that I think is special. Haven't actually played it because I'm kind of an armchair general at this point. I want to start doing some solo wargaming, but I am running into the problem of being an adult with no friends. So it's a challenge that I'm hoping to conquer through wargaming as well, because the last time this happened, I conquered it through photography, and that led to a 10-year career in photography and then drones. So figure if I can just put my mind to the things that I want to do, I can turn my life in that direction. Done it before. Maybe I can do it again. Anyway, on to the game. This is a publication by Warlord Games. Love everything they do, pretty much. And this is Death or Glory, SPQR, or just SPQR under the reference Death or Glory. I'm not really sure where this is placed within their range or how it works, but it is an ancient, specifically Roman, SPQR, if you weren't clued in on that, skirmish war game. And the reason I'm bringing it up right now is because it reminds me specifically of when I started wargaming when I was like 8, and having a rule book in my hands and being able to go through and have everything right here. You know, having 2 decades of watching Games Workshop do its thing. I'm not used to having one book. I started back in the hobby with Malifaux. And that you get the rule book, and then you need the faction book, and then there's other stuff, and it's, you know, kind of traditional payment path that way, which I understand. I do work in a company, and so, you know, it can be profitable and all that stuff. But SPQR reminds me so much of the 3rd edition 40K rule book, where you have the first section of some rules. Here's how your troops interact. Here's some equipment. Here's some additional details, and then, oh, look, it's all of Athens. Oh, look, it's Britain. Look, it's Caesar's legions. It's Dacia and Sarmatia. Which, Sarmatia? I don't know. Yeah, the historians can cut me to pieces on my pronunciation there. Gaul, Germania, Iberia, Macedonia, Persia, Sparta, and Thebes. And then some mercenary sections. And they all have army lists. And because this is a game that has 7 or 8 different categories of stats, it's very, very similar to 3rd edition Warhammer. And it's just very nostalgic. And yeah, so anyway, this is about 20 minutes here coming up on it. Thank you for listening if you've gone through all of this. My name is Zephyr McIntyre, and I'm starting Foundation Wargames Terrain, which should be online with a website here in the next month or two. Anyway, take care. Bye.